I have done Mother's Day sermons in the past on occasion. It's been a while. One of the reasons I don't do it is because I've heard women say at times, you know, I go to church on Mother's Day all lifted up, and then I get there and I hear a sermon on Psalms or on Proverbs 31, and by the time I get home, I'm depressed. So we're not going to do either this morning. We're going to continue in our study of the gospel according to Matthew. We're in chapter 23, and this is where Jesus really begins to expose more clearly all the faults and failures of the Pharisees and the scribes, describing them repeatedly as hypocrites. And we've gotten into the woe section of this chapter. We covered the first four of those last week, where he called them hypocrites because they shut off the kingdom of heaven from the people. He called them hypocrites also because they devour widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers. He called them hypocrites because they travel around on sea and land to make one proselyte and then make them into twice the son of hell as they were. He also called out woe to them because they are blind guides. And he's going to continue in this mindset through what we're going to read this morning. Four more woes. And just remember, a woe is a curse. Jesus is cursing, putting a curse on these people because of what they've done. Verse 23, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides, who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish so that the outside of it may become clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they're full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous and say, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So you testify against yourselves that you are the sons of those who murder the prophets. Fill up then the treasure of the guilt of your fathers, you serpents, you brood of vipers. How will you escape the sentence of hell? Pretty serious language, I would say, right? Some people don't like to read these kinds of things in the Bible, but they're certainly in the Bible, and so we need to take very close note of them. Just remember that scribes were considered to be the experts in the law. They were the ones who did all the transcription and all of that, and so they knew the law upside down and backwards, and we talked a lot about this a few weeks ago. There's more than likely they had memorized a good bit of the Old Testament scriptures because they were constantly in those and going over those over and over again repeatedly. It appears that they were very great sticklers when it came to things like tithing. Now, I would imagine most of you know what tithing means. The first time I ever remember hearing it, I was in a pastor's class in a church, and the pastor started talking about tithing. He said, well, everybody said what tithing is, and I'm thinking, I don't know what tithing is. But what we're talking about here is giving 10%. I would say that the New Testament paints a little bit different picture of things, and that what we find is giving in the New Testament is described more as sacrificial giving. Giving to the point it truly is sacrifice. It seems as though these guys gave 10% of absolutely everything that came into their house. it appears as if they've even gone beyond the scriptures in regard to this, because there's no place in the scriptures that say that you're supposed to give 10% of your spices. But they were sticklers about this, and this is probably one of those areas they were very prideful about. You could walk up to any Pharisee or scribe, and they would tell you they give 10% of everything to the Lord. It sounds almost as if Jesus is commending them here for their great tithing. Because he says, you were good to do that, but you should have been doing other things as well. So when it comes down to it, guys, if there's anything at all you will ever hear Jesus commend the Pharisees for, it was this. Amazing. The closest thing to accommodation they're going to get from Jesus is his comment on how serious they were about tithing. They also use it as a billy club to beat people over the head with. Because we understand that they were prideful about all kinds of things. We were told that they're prideful about their public prayers. They're prideful in the way they dress. They did all kinds of things with an intended purpose. And the intended purpose was to bring attention to themselves so that people would see how great and how awesome and how holy and how religious they were. All for the very wrong reasons. They were all about black and white laws. I've told you this story before. I was reminded of it again this week. Years ago, I had a man tell me this. He said, if you don't know any other scripture passage, you should know this one. My grandfather told me about it years ago, and I go over it every day, and I think it just kind of summarizes all of what God expects of us. And it's not even from the New Testament, it's from the book of Micah. Micah 6:8, you guys may know what is the Micah mandate, where it says there, he's told you, O man, what is good and what is right, or does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love mercy or kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. It's just kind of a summation of everything, isn't it? It's almost like taking the first and second greatest commandments and merging them into one. What about this? Do you think church people sometimes, especially leaders sometimes, use tithing or other matters, points of the law, to manipulate people? You think that's a possibility? I've spoken to a lot of people about churches over the last 25, 30 years, and one of the things I'll hear very often from people is, I went to church every Sunday, and the only thing I ever heard a sermon about was giving. Every sermon was like a tithing sermon for years and years and years and years. We talk about these things here, but we don't talk about them unless they happen to be in the scriptures that we're covering for that particular week, and we talk about them in our pastor's class. Giving really is a big part of being a Christian. There's no way of getting away from it. But can you imagine sitting under someone's teaching and the only thing you ever hear about is you're supposed to give, 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 give? Wouldn't you say there's a whole lot more to Christianity than that? Do you think it's possible for people to take Christianity and to put a legalistic kind of turn to it or twist to it? Do you think it's common for people to do that? Some people, it seems, really just love the law. They crave the law. They want the law. And they see it all as being so very, very black and white that there's never any circumstances or situations that might alter someone's understanding and application of things. My friends, that is on borderline legalism. See, Christianity has more to do with what has been done for you than what you do as a Christian. They're both important. Don't get me wrong. But we know if the first didn't precede it, there would be no second. That if all had been done for us by God through Jesus Christ, this has been done, then there would be no reason for you and I to be here at all this morning. Do all Christians put things like justice and mercy and faithfulness before things that are lesser? Notice here that Jesus makes note that there are some things that are of lesser importance. Sometimes do we get the lesser above the more important? Is that possible for us to do? I think so. There's a proverb that says this, actually says it in two places, so it must be important. It says exactly the same thing in Proverbs 14:12 and 16:25. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end of the way is death. What we're talking about here is works by self-righteousness. Sounds right to people. A lot of people believe it. But it is not the way that people are saved. We're saved only through and by the righteousness of Jesus Christ imparted to us, period. You can't add anything to it. You can't take anything away from it. It would be a sad state of affairs as Christians if we ever forgot that justice and mercy and faithfulness are all important aspects of the Christian life. Do they describe the manner in which you live? They were also hypocrites because they went to great lengths to convince people they were one way when in fact they were the opposite. They wanted everyone to think that they were great in their religion. They were very religious guys, and on the outside, they looked very religious in what they did. As we talked about last week and the week before that, they were people that were about putting up appearances so that people would think one thing of them when, in fact, they were totally the opposite. They wanted everyone to think that they were really religious. Well, you know what? They weren't. They wanted people to think they were spiritual. You know what? Not. Generous? Not. Now, you guys know anything about photoshopping? I've never used Photoshop. But I've seen the results of people using Photoshop. It's a special computer program that you can take, and you can use it to alter pictures in all kinds of ways. You can change the tinting of things, the hues of things, the colors of things. You can change the shape of people's faces. You can change the length of their hair. You can change the color of their hair. You can change them. You can make them to look like someone they just flat don't look like. Saw a picture of a woman not too long ago. It was supposedly her, but let me tell you, if I'd have seen her and saw that picture, I'd said, there's no way on God's green earth that's the same person. Obviously, what it was a picture of what she wanted to look like, or maybe she thought in her mind that she looked like, but when it came to reality, it was all just a facade. Why do people do things like that? Don't get me wrong, it really is pretty cool, because you can highlight things and do all kinds of other things with it. It seems sometimes people are all about changing the way they look on the outside. And we forget that what lies inside is far more important. So our natural tendency as sinners to try to impress other people. Everybody here wants other people to think highly of them. Everybody here wants other people to like them. Everybody here wants to feel important. Everyone here wants to feel special. Well, if you don't feel special this morning, you need to consider the gospel again. That God so loved you that he gave his only begotten son that you would become one of his children. You understand that Christianity does a lot for people. Well, one of those is it really demonstrates to people just how important we are to God. And I'm not talking about corporately. I'm talking about individually. I mean, he has demonstrated his great desire for you in doing all that he's done. If that doesn't make you feel at least a little important, I don't know what possibly could. To know that God himself came into this world and lived a terrible life, a rough life, a hard life, and died in torturous death for you. That you would be with him eternally. Sometimes people are very willing to go to great lengths to impress other people, to make other people think that they are something they really are not. You know what, guys? It's important for us to be honest with ourselves, important for us to be honest with other people. Stop putting up fronts. This is the one place in all of this world that you and I should be able to get by without putting up any fronts for anybody. Without trying to impress anybody. Because if the church is the church, it's the place for people like you. It's the place for people like me. Broken people. Fallible people. Real people. It seems as though they dress up Jerusalem a lot during the days of the Passover. Think about Passover, that's not a very good example, but you know, all these cities every year they're competing with each other to get the Super Bowl to come to their town. Why? So they can make a lot of money, right? But just think about Jerusalem in the days of Passover. The population mushroomed because you had visitors coming not only from the outlying land of Judea and Galilee, but also from other nations. So the population of the city would swell beyond capacity during the days of Passover. And it meant a lot of things. And one of those things is it meant it was a time of great commerce. Because when people go places and people come to places, they have needs. And if you can provide those needs to them, they're very happy to pay you for them. You may not realize this. There are a lot of retail stores. They tell you, my dad did this for years, and he would tell us this, that if they did not make a killing during Christmas, they would not survive a year. That most of the business that they gained for the year had to do with Christmas shopping. If you took Christmas shopping out of the picture, they would not even be able to operate their business. They make most of the money they make at Christmas time. The same thing would have been true for a lot of the merchants in Jerusalem. It was a very special time of God's people coming together for this very special occasion, this very special feast. But at the same time, it was that commercial function that probably either made or broke a lot of the businessmen in Jerusalem every year. So one of the things they would do is they would dress up the city because they wanted everybody to be impressed with Jerusalem when they came to Jerusalem. And one of the things they would do is they would take white lime dust and they would spread it all over things like tombs, to make them look all sparkly, clean, and impressive. We used to watch Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which started out in the beginning. It was really kind of, I was kind of surprised. They don't do it anymore. But they went beyond what they were supposed to be doing in the beginning. And initially it was to take an older house or something like that and renovate the house. But before you know it, they were bringing the bulldozers in. They were just plowing the whole thing down and rebuilding a new house in its place. So it was not renovation. It was tearing down and then rebuilding from scratch. Now, where did that name come from? Extreme Makeover. It was a follow-up after a series that was Extreme Makeover People Edition. And it had to do with taking people, ordinary kind of plain-looking people, and doing all kinds of things to their face and to their hair and sometimes to their body and this, that, and the other. And to make this plain Jane a gorgeous hottie or goofy John into a big Hulk. Right? Served a purpose. But did it change the people? It changed the way they looked for a short time. The problem is you're still the same old person underneath the facade. The Bible talks about uncleanness a lot. Foods that are unclean, actions that are unclean, things that are unclean. The people of God are called to clean their act up. It's part of being a Christian. It seems as if some people like to live in filth, and they're okay with it. I've been in a lot of Ugandan huts. The floor is nothing but clay that's been tacked, has been compressed by people stomping on it. Thatched roof, bamboo walls. And let me tell you something. Some of those houses were cleaner than some of the houses I know of that people live in this land. Those women don't have much, but they take great joy and great pleasure in taking care of what they do have. Some of you have heard something about our little trip up to Georgia last year with Lindsay. Lindsay and Justin bought a house when they were stationed in Kingsland, Georgia, and when they moved, they decided to rent it, and they had renters come in, and they were there for a couple of years, and they paid their rent every month on time and all that, and things were going really well for a good bit of their stay. But then all of a sudden, the rent payments started spreading out, and the next thing you know, they weren't coming at all. So they had to evict these people. And we went up there with her to clean the mess up after they left. And let me tell you, I'll just give you a little bit of it. We got there, the outside looked horrible. But the outside was far better than the inside. I mean, the outside was easy to fix by just cleaning, pulling some weeds and out of the gutters. There were trees growing in the gutters, if you can believe that. And Riley came up and did all that. We opened the door, and the stench took your breath away. Lindsay, on the spot, started crying. This house was brand new. They had the house built. So she's standing inside her house. It's only 4 years old about that time. That looks like it is ready to be demolished. Looked at the carpets, and my whole thing is we got to put a lot of that stuff out. There's no way that we're ever going to be able to get those carpets where they're even presentable. Lori spent 2 days doing nothing but getting gum and grease and oil and grit and clay and everything else out of carpets. They obviously fried everything they ate because it was grease residue everywhere in the house, over every mirror, over every light fixture, everywhere. I won't tell you what I found growing underneath the sink or the stuff we found underneath the stove when we pulled it out. The toilet had apparently overflowed at some time, and no one bothered to ever clean the mess up. Isn't that bad? Uncleanness is all around us. That's an extreme example of it. Many of us grew up in a day when we were told and we were taught that you not only take care of other people's property, you take better care of other people's property than you do your own, because it's not your own, it's theirs. Unfortunately, the culture that we live in today, guys, is propagating this kind of practice and this kind of thinking. These people were irate when the judge told them they had to get out of what they claimed to be their house. I told Lindsay it's a good thing all this happened, because if you'd have waited another couple of years, there wouldn't be anything here worth salvaging. I mean, you can find dirtiness, uncleanness anywhere. It's everywhere. James writes this. First, if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. Sounds like a scribe or a Pharisee. Christianity is about a lot of things, guys. But one of the biggest ones is this, is being cleaned up. You know, as your faith rests in Jesus Christ, you have been cleansed to absolute holiness before God the Father. That's hard for us to grasp. Because when we look at ourselves, that's not exactly what we see if we be honest with ourselves. There's still uncleanness. How much do you hate that uncleanness? How much do you want to be done with it? How much do you want it to be out of your life forever? How much did we let people see what we want them to see and at the same time hold back the things that we don't? How much like our life really is that house? Looked okay, a little bit okay on the outside. We think as long as we look a little okay, we're okay. But inside it was a mess. Praise be to God, because he's all about cleaning up messes. He's all about cleaning up even the most messiest of messes. He calls us to endeavor in it. But we know that ultimately we cannot clean ourselves up. We can't clean our own act up. God's got to do it. We rely upon Him. We lean upon Him to do that which we can't do, that which is impossible for us. Christianity is about cleaning, and guys, and it's not just superficial, on the face a little bit cleaning, on the surface. It's the kind of cleaning that gets down deep inside of you, as far as you can get inside of you. Sometimes God's got to get out the Brillo pad. You remember what a Brillo pad is? Those little wire things now that are they're plastic now. They used to be wire SOS pads. We used to use them for things like cleaning the grill on the grill to get that stuff off of there. Sometimes doesn't it feel like God's got the Brillo pad out and He's using it on you? It's a bad feeling in a way. But isn't it worth it? Because of what lies on the other side of it. Don't forget who you are. Don't see yourself as something that you're not. Get this. These people acknowledge that they understand something, and that is that their forefathers murdered the prophets of God. And they just want to distance themselves from their forefathers, because if we had been there, we wouldn't have done something as terrible, as awful as that. But you need to understand something. These are the guys who are about to murder the very greatest prophet that ever lived. The prophet among prophets. Jesus Christ. Now, what does that say about their boasting? Not very impressed, are you? But they impress themselves. I asked you earlier if you've ever killed anyone. It may be in Sunday school. Have you ever killed anyone? See, these guys thought they were great because they could tell Jesus, well, I've never killed anybody. Yet. Christians, in a sense, are all about killing people. Don't misread me. Don't go on a shooting spree this afternoon. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is killing people with kindness. There's something about kindness and mercy and grace that appeals even to the hardest-hearted person. May not be apparent on the surface, but it serves its purpose in the end. A lot of you recognize the name Norma Covey. She was Roe in Roe versus Wade. Remember that? Very adamant about her cause for years. Pushed it, pushed it, pushed it. She eventually became a Christian. And she did everything she could to get Roe versus Wade overturned. What caused the difference? Well, there was a lady, a Christian lady, that worked in a pregnancy center, a crisis center, close by to where Norma Covey worked in her woman's clinic. And this woman had a daughter. And she got in the habit of bringing coffee and a little treat to Norma Covey every morning. A donut or something. hard-hearted Norma eventually caved in. Because she could not believe this little girl loved her enough to do what she did. That little girl broke her heart. A heart that needed to be broken. By loving Norma. Where Norma was. Not where she thought she might ought to be. Kindness, my friends, is something that is getting lesser and harder to find. And when we see it, you know what? Very often we should be thinking, that must be a Christian on the other end of that. Because kindness is one of our ways of life. Kindness, gentleness, grace, mercy. God's given it to us. And we must pass it on to others. So, have you killed anybody with kindness lately? Plenty out there need it. A lot of places where you don't even want to go. We live in a world that desperately needs Jesus Christ with every moment that passes. There are people out there that are perishing. There are people out there still, even in the United States of America, who will die without ever hearing the gospel one time in their whole life. We're God's missionaries. Every one of us. Every one of us. You have a mission field. And what God wants is for each one of us to be faithful to that mission field. We know this. We know that that little girl really didn't change Norma Covey, that God did it. He just used her to do it. And he can use every one of us to do the same thing. And he does it all the time. We're going to administer the Lord's Supper this morning. Before we do that, the praise team is going to come.